listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We are joined by Andy McCarthy, better known as Andrew C. McCarthy. He is an author, a commentator, an analyst of great renown, and always a welcome guest here. And Andy, I wanted to turn to the state of play with respect to the president's efforts to restrict more jihadists from coming to this country. This has been known as a result of several executive orders as a travel ban. He, I think, actually described it as an immigration pause. It's been challenged in courts. Where does this stand now, and what should be done to try to prevent the kind of dangers that he's clearly and properly concerned about from metastasizing further here?
Well, I think, Frank, that the travel bans were well-intentioned, but they were counterproductive toward getting to the end that I think the president said he wanted during the campaign and has indicated from time to time since then that he wants, which is to deal with the issue of vetting or screening aliens who want to come to the United States, whether as immigrants or under some other immigration status. And I think, as I've maintained for a long time, the travel ban was at best a marginal improvement, if that, in our security, because it only dealt with a very small slice of the problem regarding countries that the people who were doing the screening already knew were problematic. But in the meantime, the litigation itself forced the Justice Department into the position of having to defend the president from claims of anti-Muslim bias arising out of his campaign rhetoric. And as a result, they took, I think, foolishly the position that there was no desire on the administration's part to take religion into account in these screening decisions. And they're trying to show that the president is not anti-Muslim. And my view of it is, I don't think you have to be anti-Muslim to recognize that the jihadist threat and the broader Sharia supremacist ideology that spurs it is something that arises out of Islam, and that any effective immigrant screening process has to be able to vet for that ideology and try to keep it out of our country.
This does seem to be such eminent sense, common sense, Andy. You've talked about this in the context of looking for the mafia in Italian communities, because that's where they come from, and, you know, Irish terrorists in the Irish community and so on. And yet we've really stripped ourselves of this capacity, not just in this case, it seems, but unfortunately in a lot of others of law enforcement, intelligence, military-connected activities as well. So does the Supreme Court's, as I understand it, basic approval of this limited ban by the president or pause still hold, or are courts down the line continuing to obstruct it? And I know you were one of the signatories, along with myself, of a recommendation to the Supreme Court to talk about the thing that really matters here, which is how do we filter these folks out, and your thoughts on Sharia supremacism as that filter.
Well, let's say two things. First, the thing that we have to win on, and then where I think the Supreme Court is at. Having looked at this for a long time, Frank, the way I boil it down is that we have to win on one simple fundamental question, and that is Sharia supremacism a totalitarian political ideology, or is it religion? Because if it's a totalitarian political ideology, then we can screen for it and vet for it. We've done that in history, and there's no constitutional problem with it. But if it's deemed to be religion, and just another strain of Islam that's as equally entitled to all the protections of the First Amendment as any other religion, notwithstanding that it purports to be much more than a religion, it's an entire political and legal system. But if the courts come down and say that, you know, this strain of Islam is a religion, then I don't see how we can protect ourselves, because I don't, you know, it's going to be very, very difficult to vet in a context that the courts find lawful. So to me, that's the hill worth dying on. You know, all this stuff about the travel ban is a distraction.
But that proposition isn't being tested so far in court as of this point, is it?
Well, and my point, Frank, is that it's not only not being tested, but we're being put in a posture that will make it more difficult to prevail on the ultimate question. So that's what I worry about. And as far as the Supreme Court specifically is concerned, the cases that are before it now, I tried to break it to people, including people in the administration, when the Supreme Court let the travel ban go into effect, or the so-called travel ban go into effect in June, that it was not the victory that the administration was painting it as, because in order, I think, to keep the court together and unified, there was a compromise made on the Supreme Court where they let the ban go into effect, but they created their own judicially legislated exemption from it, creating this kind of very ambiguous category or categories of people who, supposedly have some kind of a concrete relationship with the United States that would allow them to exempt themselves from the travel ban and be admitted to the United States, notwithstanding that the president's made a finding that the national security of the United States requires keeping people from these particular countries out. So I thought it was something the courts had no right to do. That's why the three conservative members, the three reliably conservative members of the court, dissented from that. And I think ultimately we're going to be right back where we started from in the next case, which I expect will be on the – there's already litigation and a restraining order challenging the president's final order, and that is certainly headed back to the court. And I think the court is going to have out and argue out and decide, and probably in a much more divisive manner than the June decision suggests, exactly whether the president can do this or not.
Yeah, which is something that you have, I think, quite rightly said is clearly within his mandate constitutionally and statutorily. It's just staggering that we're even still thrashing about this. Andy, we don't have time to do justice to this, but just very quickly, your thoughts on the status of the special counsel, the prospect that Mike Flynn may now be cooperating with them, what this means for the Trump team, and whether really another special counsel is needed to look at the matters that the current one seems to have a conflict of interest on, namely Uranium One.
Well, let me take the last part, because that's probably the easiest part. I really think that Trey Gowdy is right about this, Frank. This is what we have a Justice Department for. I mean, we don't need a special counsel to investigate, say, the Clinton Foundation and Uranium One. In fact, we understood that the Justice Department and the FBI were already investigating the Clinton Foundation a year ago. The only time you have a special counsel, which as we're seeing day to day and our past experience confirms this, it's a monstrous institution, the special counsel, whether you call it independent prosecutor or what have you. And we should have it only when it's absolutely necessary. In the Mueller situation, whatever you think of that situation, it would be the Trump administration investigating itself, which is the problem. That problem does not present itself with respect to the Clinton Foundation or, corruption activity, whether it's by Republicans or Democrats outside the executive branch. It's just this very narrow, unique situation. So I think absolutely we don't need another special counsel, but we need the Justice Department to get busy.
To do its job, indeed. Andy, we're out of time, so we'll have to come back to you on the Flynn question anon. It may become clearer in the meantime, but we thank you very much for your time today and the great work that you do at National Review Online, PJ Media, Fox, and elsewhere, and I so appreciate you joining us. Come back to us again very soon. We'll speak with Kevin Freeman next about China's economic warfare against the United States right after this.